Brothers and sisters and respected listeners, I first of all want to extend the thanks from my mother for all the cards and letters that she's received. Today, we will continue on the theme of this week's gathering of the Bride of Christ. We will also be discussing different women in the Bible in relation to that bride. My assignment was Jochebed, the mother of Moses, the man who was chosen by Yahweh to deliver the natural bride of Christ out of Egypt. We will discuss Jochebed's role as a mother, a protector, and a nurturer. Next, we will look into how the bride and the bridegroom had been protected throughout the ages by the Egyptians. And finally, the integration of the natural and spiritual bride of Christ, who will become one through faith by the promises made to Abraham. What did Jochebed do to develop her as a mother of legacy? In a land of palaces, chariots, and gold, she was but a slave. Under the burning sun and towering pyramids, her people toiled under the thumb of Pharaoh. The ruler of Egypt ruled that the midwives had to kill all newborn males of the Hebrew women at birth. And this was because he feared that this nation would become too great. It was the Hebrew midwives that voiced that the Hebrew women delivered before the midwives could attend to their responsibility. So Pharaoh decided that if at birth death could not be accomplished, then all male newborns would be thrown into the River Nile to be drowned. So in the waters of the Nile, the Egyptian ruler had ordered that Jochebed's newborn son should die along with every other Hebrew boy that was born. In the midst of these and other adversities, this woman, Jochebed, raised three children who joined the ranks of the most renowned leaders of the people of Israel. Yet most Christians don't even recognize her name. Jochebed was the mother of Moses, of Miriam, and of Aaron, three of the most famous figures in the Old Testament. She was a powerful impact on her family and of her world. The prophet Micah later wrote that God had specifically sent these three children to lead his people. Micah chapter 6 and 4, "For I brought thee up out of the land of Egypt and redeemed thee out of the house of bondage, and I set before thee Moses, Aaron, and Miriam." Miriam became a noted prophetess. Exodus 15 and 20, "And Miriam the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, took a timbrel in her hand, and all the women went out after her with timbrels and with dances." Aaron became the first high priest. Moses became the spiritual and political leader of his people, the children of Israel. Deuteronomy chapter 34 and 10, "And there was not arisen a prophet since in Israel like unto Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face." This was quite a legacy for a slave woman. Seeing such godly children raised in one family in the midst of an ungodly world bears some close attention on our part. These three children grew to become adults who knew Yahweh and had the desire to obey his will and to glorify him. What did Jochebed do that helped create such children? Simply, she loved them. With agape love, unwavering, unconditional, and unending. Jochebed deeply loved her children. She believed that her children were special and unique gifts of God. Exodus chapter 2 and 2, "And the woman conceived and bare a son, and when she bare him, she saw that he was a goodly child, and she hid him 3 months." Paul in Hebrews tells us that Yahweh had given them an unusual child. Hebrews 11 and 22. I got the wrong verse here, I'm sorry. "Her children were Yahweh's precious gift, given to her to raise, teach, mold and love in the way He intended through the eyes of love. Parents who love their children not only teach them, but are also taught by them. Not in that many parents now have to do their children's homework, but they experience a different perspective on life with their changing due to the changing environment in which they live. Parents become students of the child. How else would parents develop a sense of what their children are doing when they're out of their sight? In the spiritual sense, in their careful, loving observation of the child, they learn how Yahweh has made him or her, and they work in cooperation with Yahweh to help their child develop as Yahweh intended. Proverbs 22 and 6, train up a child in the way he should go, and even when he is old, he will not depart from it. To love a child the way Yahweh intended requires a great deal of parental self-sacrifice. This is not a popular theme in our society today. We value production, be it in our jobs, our education, our home and our lawn work, or even relationships. To love a child means to do quite the opposite. Practically, this means that at some point we must sacrifice our production and accomplishments, because children don't care about our accomplishments at all. They care about how much we love them, and that is measured by time and the attention that we give them. Each family needs to determine to what extent and degree this sacrifice will take place in their home. But there are only 24 hours a day, and sacrifice will have to happen if love really is to be there. The sacrificial love of parents forms the bedrock of the children's identity and personality. In other words, this is the fabric of each individual family process. It is in response to the giving love of a parent that the child begins to formulate his or her own unique value and special significance, or, in the family process wordage, their family tattoo. Jochebed loved her children. This was evident to each of them as they grew and developed in this nurturing soil of agape love. Jochebed was not afraid. Jochebed was secure in her identity, and she knew and worshipped the God who can and will allow for the impossible. Her love for Yahweh and her children far surpassed her fear of social disapproval and punishment of Pharaoh. She stood for a cause she believed was right and risked the penalty of obedience to Pharaoh. And the woman conceived and bare a son, and when she saw him that he was a goodly child, she hid him for 3 months. She was obedient to Yahweh. Her focus on fear was on Yahweh and not on man. So what type of jeopardy did Jochebed put herself in? Not only did she have the maternal desire to protect her youngest son, but she put herself in potential danger and potentially faced death. Now just think on the task of what Jochebed faced. Just think about how hard it must have been to hide a newborn. This in itself was a monumental task, especially living in that day and age of the society in Egypt, in a ghetto type of existence. Newborns are not the most cooperative individuals. They are not innately born with the knowledge of the rules of hide and seek, but rather they have the tendency to give up their position easily for feeding, for touching, or for just being held by their mother. They want what they want when they want it. Here I am, coddle me, feed me, hold me. And further, the vocal cords of an infant can produce sounds at decibels that can be heard very far away. Just imagine Jochebed managing this endeavor with soldiers in the area ready to take her boy and cast him into the Nile. But Jochebed wagered everything, herself and her children, because she deeply thought that she could undertake the task of skirting the Egyptian law, because she felt her children were special and they were given to her by Yahweh. Psalm 27, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? Then, of course, we often pass our fears to our children. As an example, a mother who is a fear of dogs or cats may pass this fear onto their children, not by voicing that you should be afraid of the dog, but by demonstrating some reaction when in the presence of the animal, thus demonstrating fear to their child. The child will see the fear and may also assimilate this fear unconsciously. In the silent, daily modeling of our fears, we communicate to our children what we worship in practical terms. The focus of our fear, whether man or Yahweh, becomes equivalent to our object of faith. The fear, Proverbs 29 and 25, the fear of man bringeth a snare, but whoso putteth his trust in the Lord shall be safe. What you fear practically determines your behavior, which in turn defines where you have placed your faith. The only ultimate fear which leads to wisdom is the reverent fear of Yahweh. Psalm 111 and 10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. A good understanding have all they that do thereafter. His praise endureth forever. Jochebed modeled this to her children. Jochebed did not let the world squeeze into her mold, into its mold. Romans 12 and 2. And be not fashioned according to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is good and acceptable and perfect, the perfect will of God. Moses, Aaron, and Miriam saw Jochebed's deep commitment to another kingdom. She saw in her fear of Yahweh that displaced the fear of man. So Jochebed trusted Yahweh. Raising children requires that we protect them, provide for and protect them. Due to our human limitations, we often are able to do this to the extent that we'd like. We are unable to do this to the extent that we would like. As a result, we often fret and worry because of the impossible and powerless situations in which we find ourselves. Jochebed recognized that she worshipped a sovereign and loving God, and she was able to trust him. After Jochebed conceived and gave birth to Moses, she hid him for 3 months. When she could not hide him any longer, she had to find another alternative. When she undoubtedly had exhausted all other possibilities, she placed him in a reed basket and sent him down by the banks of the Nile. Exodus 2 and 3. And when she could no longer hide him, she took for him an ark of bulrushes and daubed it with slime and with pitch. And she put the child therein and laid it in the flags by the river's brink. And his sister stood afar off to know what would be done to him. This was completely an act of faith. She was trusting Yahweh to deal with her impossible situation. When Jochebed made the basket of reeds and placed Moses in the Nile, Paul states in Hebrews that this was an act of faith. Hebrews 11 and 23. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months by his parents, because they saw he was a goodly child, and they were not afraid of the king's commandment. She had done all that she could do, and then left the rest to Yahweh. She waited for him to intervene in her difficult situation, although I'm sure Miriam had some help in the process of probably pushing the ark of bulrushes toward the Pharaoh's daughter. Psalm 27 and 14, wait on the Lord and be strong, and let thine heart take courage. Yea, wait thou on the Lord. She did not live only by her senses, but had a living faith, a confident assurance of realities not seen. Hebrews 11, now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the providing of things not seen. Jochebed trusted in a living God whose name was Yahweh. He was not an abstraction or religious doctrine, but a living reality. Her children in turn observed this deep commitment and trust and emulated it in their lives. Jochebed then let go. In Exodus 2 and 10, Jochebed lets her youngest son go to live in the palace of Pharaoh. And the child grew, and she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. And she called his name Moses and said, "Because I drew him out of the water." It is hard to imagine how difficult this was, not only for her, but also for Moses and the rest of the family. Most likely she often pondered the reality of that coming day as she nursed and raised her son for Pharaoh's daughter. She had raised him with the expectation that he would eventually have to leave her love and care. But she was able to trust in the positive impact that she had made in Moses' life. Jochebed recognized that children are not a possession, but only a trust lent to us by God for a brief period of time. Her identity was not dependent on her children. She did not need them in order to feel needed or significant. These realizations impacted her mothering. Her children did not need to fight her to gain their own identities. She understood that she did not own these individuals, these identities, and emotionally gave them their freedom and their independence. Jochebed was able to let her children go. She did not grasp on to her role of a mother. She was able to let go when the time came to do so. She accepted the limits of her mothering role and responsibilities. Now Moses was drawn out of the River Nile. Moses, drawn out of the River Nile, was reared by his mother, and this was done in the living space of the Pharaoh's daughter. He was undoubtedly exposed to the Egyptian ways, but because of his mother's nurturing, incorporated the Hebrew identity into his thought process and eventually actions. Exodus chapter 2 and 11. And it came to pass in those days, when Moses was grown, that he went out unto his brethren and looked on their burdens and spied an Egyptian smiting an Hebrew, one of his brethren. And he looked this way and that, and when he saw there was no man, he slew the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. And when he went out the second day, behold, two men of the Hebrews strove together. And he said to him that did the wrong, "Wherefore smitest thou thy fellow?" It was after this encounter with the Egyptians and the reality that the Hebrews were in fact slaves in a foreign land that Moses was forced to protect his life and flee to Midian, where he married and had children of his own and thus continued the process and cycle that we have discussed with his mother, Jochebed. One different thing occurred. Moses, through faith, believed in the promises made to Abraham and was given a task that would change the nation of Egypt and solidify the nation of Israel. The Hebrew nation was the nation that crossed over into Egypt. By the close relationship of Yahweh and Moses, the nation of Israel would become symbolically immersed in the Red Sea through the Exodus. In the scheme of things, we have seen that the children of Israel, Jacob, were encouraged to go to Egypt by Joseph, the son who was sold into slavery by his jealous brothers. Not that they did a very good thing, but it turned out to be a good thing in Yahweh's plan. They were to be saved in Egypt, unwittingly, and eventually needed to return to the land of promise through Abraham. Genesis 13 and 14. And the Lord said unto Abram, after that Lot was separated from him, lift up now thine eyes and look from the place where thou art, northward, southward, eastward, and westward. For all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever. And I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can number the dust of the earth, then shall thy seed also be numbered. The promise was made to Abraham, the father of the natural bride of Christ. How do we reach this conclusion? Genesis 13 and 15, "For all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever." But Abraham did not receive this promise during his natural lifetime. We know that this promise was to be fulfilled in the future. It is through faith that Abraham believed in the promises made to him by Yahweh. Because there was sin in the earth, a development from the first man, Adam, another event needed to take place, the advent of the bridegroom. Galatians 4 and 4. "And when the fullness of the time was come, God sent forth his son, made of a woman, made under the law." This was Christ. Once again, Mary, Christ's mother, was in this instance told by the angel that her son was indeed special. Luke 1 and 26. "And in the sixth month, the angel Gabriel was sent from God into a city of Galilee named Nazareth, to a virgin espoused to a man whose name was Joseph, of the house of David, and to the virgin's name, and the virgin's name was Mary. And the angel came into her and said, 'Hail, thou art highly favored. The Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women.' And when she saw him, she was troubled at his saying, and cast in her mind what manner of salutation this should be. And the angel said unto her, 'Fear not, Mary, for thou hast found favor with Yahweh. And behold, thou shalt conceive in thy womb, and bring forth a son, and shall call his name Jesus. He shall be great, and he shall be called the Son of the Highest. And the Lord God shall give unto him the throne of his father David. And he shall reign over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there shall be no end.' Then said Mary unto the angel, 'How shall this be, seeing I know not a man?' And the angel answered and said unto her, 'The Holy Spirit shall come upon thee, and the power of the Highest shall overshadow thee. Therefore also that holy thing which shall be born of thee shall be called the Son of God.'" Mary was given this information that her son would be more than just special. He would be the heir to the promises made to Abraham. All the mothering skills to nurture, protect, and to teach this child would be on her shoulders, especially in the early years of Christ. There was one other interesting thing about the first year of Christ's life. The ruler over Israel wanted all male children born to be executed, for fear, once again, that a male child would come and fulfill a prophecy that was told unto him by the wise men traveling to see Jesus. Once again, paranoia ruled the rulers. As Pharaoh feared takeover by the children of Israel, so Herod feared takeover by Christ. What a burden this is to carry by those who are not familiar with Yahweh's word, plan, or intentions with man in this world. So Jesus was brought to Egypt. He was taken there to be harbored and protected so that the plan of Yahweh could continue. Matthew chapter 2 and 13. "And when they were departed, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream, saying, 'Arise, and take the young child and his mother and flee into Egypt, and be thou there until I bring thee word, for Herod will seek the young child to destroy him.' And he arose and took the young child and his mother by night and departed into Egypt. And when he arose, it was there until the death of Herod, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken of the Lord by the prophet, saying, 'Out of Egypt have I called my son.'" So we see through Yahweh's plan, the natural bride through the children of Israel by the promises made to Abraham. We see the bridegroom who is to marry the bride in Christ, the son of Yahweh, who will be ruler over the earth with those saints. The natural branches, as well as the grafted in branches, working and existing in the kingdom in a clean environment with rules and regulations that will be followed, and in a place for all to sit under their own vine and fig tree. But the multitudinous bride of Christ has not been established as yet. There is one more part that needs to be accomplished, and that is the destruction of those who oppose Yahweh and think that they are in control of this earth. Man wants to prove that all events existed as a natural course of things. They want to eliminate the Yahweh factor. It is easy to take the Yahweh factor out of the meaning and purpose of life. Just ignore it and it will go away. Well, I don't think so. It is the duty of each one of us to protect the word, just as Jochebed, by nurturing it in our children's, Yahweh's plan with this earth and the opportunity that we have in partaking of the promises made to Abraham. Just like Jochebed, realizing that she bore something precious, we can call it the pearl of great price. We, like her, need to protect it, nurture it, and ultimately let that knowledge go through teaching and example. Teach the children, both natural and spiritual, our children in the flesh and our young in the word. Nurture and watch them grow. And especially learn from them. Hold fast that which is good. Wait for the bridegroom. Wait, for the bridegroom comes to take his bride. Revelations 22:12. And behold, I come quickly, and my reward is with me, to give every man according as his work shall be. I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end, the first and the last. Blessed are they that do his commandments, and they that they may have the right to the tree of life and may enter in through the gates into the city. For without are dogs and sorcerers and whoremongers and murderers and idolaters and whosoever loveth and maketh a lie. I, Jesus, have sent mine angels to testify unto you these things in the churches. I am the root and the offspring of David and the bright and morning star. And the Spirit and the bride say, Come. And let him that heareth say, Come. And let him that is athirst come. And whosoever will, let him take of the water of life freely.